sermon because I was on kind of a short notice here for this sermon. I thought one thing that I might do is give the same split sermon that I gave while I was at the feast in Buffalo. I was assigned to do a split sermon on Youth Day. Youth Day. So most of you falling into the category, Carl and Armin and Hazel, Anita, myself, Dick, all falling into the category of youth, would be interested in hearing the youth sermon, which I had designed for the youth at the Feast of Tabernacles. I don't think it's necessarily something that's so specific that it wouldn't benefit all of us to hear it, to look at it, and to think about it. And I don't know who's watching, and we got two, age nine, one age seven here. And I hope we have, young people, in the Buffalo area who are sitting at home, maybe watching this on the camera at the Rigord House home and at the Kalea House home. And, maybe they will be something interested in that way. But as we're all parents, I think it all, if we aren't parents, we have been children at one time or another. This might relate to all of us in that way. I did, and I was a little bit wondering when I got the assignment to do a split sermon on Youth Day. Why would they ask somebody as old as I am to speak on Youth Day? So I had questions in my mind then. I haven't spoken on Youth Day in a long time. So the question was, for me, what can I say of relevance to the young people, and how can it be most effectively conveyed? And so those are two questions. I started to think about that by examining what I always go back to when I think about the Feast of Tabernacles, Deuteronomy 14, verse 23. These are my dominating notions having to do with the Feast of Tabernacles. Let me just read this one verse. You shall eat before the Lord your God in the place which he shall choose to place his name, the tithe of your corn. Are we making a change here? The tithe of your corn, of your wine, of your oil, the firstlings of your herds, and of your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Eternal, your God, always. And so I look at the Feast of Tabernacles in two respects. One, we're going there to learn to fear the Eternal, and we're going to rejoice. It's our commanded rejoicing that also is given to us by God. So the question then that I had was what to speak about and how to say it. And I try to seek humility and pray for anything I have in an assignment, which I do when I come before you as well. What does God want me to say? In this case, 40 minutes. I think you're going to find this a little longer today. I stretched it out a little bit. That will help our youth to learn to fear the Eternal. After thinking about it and praying about it, I thought that this was the answer that God was giving me. Now, I guess I've self-identified as an old albatross just simply by the type of phone that I had. Most of the young people in Germany would look at this phone and laugh because they use far more complicated and advanced telephones than this. And Jackson and Mason, I'll be fiddling around trying to figure out how to use some piece of electronic equipment. They'll punch it two or three times and say, "That's how you do it." And then, okay. But that, I felt, do you ever remember seeing Albert the Albatross? He was on a commercial on television, a big bird flying and landing. Well, I guess holding up a cell phone like this kind of identifies me as Albert the Albatross. That was an attention getter. And it was something I thought that all of the young people could relate to. They relate to cell phones, and they use cell phones regularly in every way. And so if I could establish contact with young people based on something that was important to them, and then talk to them about a subject that had a spiritual basis, that I might be able to reach them a little bit in that regard. My approach to this is that you, as a human being, are very much, spiritually speaking, like a cell phone, in that spirit beings can communicate to you and I. And how they do it exactly and what the basis for that is, it's a good question. Now, I can hold his cell phone up. Hazel called me from the back of the room. I didn't want to give away the secret about who it was that placed the call. She called me from the back of the room, but she needed a specific number code to reach me. Now, each and every one of us as human beings, we have a finger. Well, we have, 10 fingers, and each finger has a unique set of lines and indentions in the skin. And we are individually, absolutely unique. Our telephone, it's an absolutely unique number that anybody on the face of the earth can reach us by, isn't it? What about you? What about you? Can God reach you specifically and individually in the same way that you can reach another person on your cell phone? That's the overall concept behind the sermon. And it isn't only God that knows your number, is it? God knows your number, right? He knows how to communicate with you. And I would surmise that you know when you're being communicated with by God. And then there are other spirit beings that also like to communicate with you and to infect, we would say, your attitude in a negative way. And we all have those kinds of communications coming to us as well, don't we? Very similar on the cell phone. What about you? If you're a young person, you all are. Is God calling you? Is God calling you? Now that brings up a particular piece of jargon, doesn't it? Call. Spiritually speaking, we speak about being called, or God has called, or God has not called. And so that's a piece of jargon, and I think it's an unfamiliar piece of jargon to a lot of young people, but when we talk about getting a call on a cell phone, it's a really well-known piece of jargon, isn't it? What's the difference? What's the difference? Very similar, I would say. And yet, because we have the word calling used in a spiritual context, it's been convoluted and not understood in the simple way that it should be understood. God calls individual people. So, to the young people, I wanted to explain on their own terms that God was calling them, just as it would be on a cell phone. Every cell phone has the capacity to have a list of contacts, doesn't it? And if I open this up and I push the right buttons, if I knew which buttons to push, I could get a list of contacts that would come up. And then I could somehow identify the contact on there, push the send button, and the call would be sent. That there's a list of contacts. Those contacts are entered into the memory of the cell phone by the owner. I see people walking around with their thumbs doing this all the time. Well, that's beyond me. But the list of contacts are entered into the cell phone by the owner of that cell phone. Do you believe that God has a list of contacts that he is calling? In that way, similar to the owner of a cell phone, God has his own list of contacts, just like you would have on your cell phone. And he uses those contacts to call you from time to time. But he doesn't use those contacts. He only calls those people whom he has entered into his list of contacts. Here's where the Bible has that to say. John chapter 6 and verse 44. No man can come unto me except the Father, which has sent me, draws him. He's got to put your number, and you're spiritually speaking, you are a unique individual, and he knows how to communicate individually with each and every one of us. That's amazing in itself, isn't it? You know, he can by his own spiritual means communicate individually with any particular person on the face of the earth at any time. And Christ is saying, the only way that you can be called is if God puts you in his list of contacts. No man can come unto me, Christ said, except the Spirit of the Father which has sent me draws him. So that's how that functions. That's what the Bible tells us about the calling from God. If we look at this as something where we are called, where we the thing rings and we answer it as a call. God rings, spiritually speaking, rings our phone, and we are being communicated we are being communicated from God in that way, the way that we can perceive and understand. And it's unique because nobody else gets that kind of call. The rest of the world, many of them want to communicate with God. But God is going to communicate with everybody, but he's not ready to communicate with all of the world at this time. And so, while he knows their number, and he knows how to communicate with them, and he may communicate with them in certain ways, he is not calling them at this time. So, for our youth, I can tell you, you have a calling. If it takes a special calling, that's what it says, isn't it? It takes a special calling. God has to call you or you can't come to Christ. God the Father must call you or you cannot come to Christ. If that's the case, and it is the case, the Bible is unequivocal about that. If that is the case, and if it takes a special calling, how do I know? If talking in a personal way, how do you know that God is calling you? Let's look at Matthew 13. Verses 10 and 11. Now, this is not to answer the question that I just asked. I'll get to answering that question in a minute. But this is to make a point. This is to emphasize again the point that I just made, that unless you are called by God, you don't have access to understanding. Verse 10, the disciples came and said to Christ, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" You see, Christ spoke to people who came to listen to him in parables. And mostly, nobody understood those parables. Christ answered his disciples when they asked him, "Why are you speaking to us in parables? Why don't you just tell us what you mean?" He said, "No." And this is a particular sentence structure here I'd like for you to notice in verse 11. "It is given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. To them it is not given." The construction of that, there's two entirely different groups being talked about in that one sentence. "To you it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. To them it is not given." Them and you. Christ talks about people who came to listen to him, you know, and by the thousands, they were there by the thousands to listen to him. And he says this to a very few of those people. "To you, it is given to understand the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. To them, it is not given," at least not yet. It had not been given at that time. It will be given to all of them sooner or later, but in God's own time. In God's own time. And how great is that difference? How different does that make you to understand the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven?
it makes you, and it sets, it completely transforms you from where you were into an entirely different creature, knowing the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. I make an emphatic statement. God is ringing your cell phone. God is ringing your cell phone. He is not ringing, except in very rare circumstances, He is not ringing the cell phone of young people who are outside of the church. He occasionally does, but not very often. How can I say that? How can I know about your relationship with God? Because the Bible tells me about it. That's how I can know about it. I can know from the Bible that God is calling you if you are the child of at least one converted parent. That's what Paul has to say in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 14. By the way, 1 Corinthians is a book that was written. I always like to mention this as I pass through 1 Corinthians. It was written in 49 A.D. Timeline's important here. 1 Corinthians was written in 49 A.D. In 55 A.D. The conference of Acts 15 was in 49 A.D. And here's Paul, 6 years after the conference, teaching the church in Corinth to keep the holy days. That's one of the primary themes of the book of 1 Corinthians, keeping the holy days. But the young people who have at least one converted parent, Paul states this very emphatically. He states it, first of all, about husbands and wives. The unbelieving husband is sanctified. What does that mean? Set apart for a holy purpose by the wife. And the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. And if it wasn't so else, he says, if it weren't so, in other words, your children were unclean, but now are they holy? So, young people, it says here that you are holy. Parents, it says that your children are holy. What does that mean? It means for sure, among other things that we might attribute to it, it means for sure that they have a calling. God has put their number in His list of contacts, and He rings that number. So that's what the Bible has to say. I thought about this in regard to that old movie. I think it was the Last Emperor. In that movie, Peter O'Toole is a professor type teaching this boy who is going to become the emperor of, he's already become the emperor of China when he was a baby. And they had to raise him because he was the descendant, and he became the emperor of China. But Peter O'Toole is trying to teach him how to be a gentleman by Western customs. And Peter O'Toole says to him, a gentleman should always mean what he says and say what he means. So he's instructing this Chinese boy on how to be a gentleman in terms of Western terms. And I just thought about that because here's the Bible, and the Bible is saying what it means and meaning what it says. That if you are the child of one converted parent, you have a calling. Now, I think about this cell phone, and it's got another characteristic that's, to me, very interesting. It has a caller ID. What caller ID is, I think about the days when I go back so far, you know, that they had like eight parties on the line, the telephone in some small little town, and everybody pick up the phone and listen to what everybody else was saying, and they had operators on the other end, and there was no privacy at all on your telephone. Everybody could listen to everybody in these little towns. That's how telephones operated. And you had to, some of them, even I think I saw one at Hazel's house once, had a crank on it where you had to crank it, and then you take this off and you talk into a speaker over here. You've all seen, some of you are old enough to have seen that. Hard to believe. I thought I was the only one. But it's been a revolution in telephone communications, hasn't it? In our lifetime. I know that this phone now pops up a number when it rings, and if it recognizes that number, it will put the name on the screen beside the number. Now, I remember the old movies, days of the old movies, and somebody kidnapped somebody and they're calling up to get a ransom, and they speak, they start talking, and they know not to talk too long because somebody's in the back room crying with all of these gizmos and devices and gadgets to figure out where the telephone call is coming from, tracing the call. Just open it up, and there it is now. That's how much advanced it is. So when a person gets a call on their cell phone, they can look and see who it is that's calling. And I would submit to you that when you are getting communication from God, you know it. You can see it, understand it, and know it. When you are getting communication, spiritual communication from a bad source, you also can detect, understand, and know that, pretty much like looking at your caller ID. You say, well, who's calling? When that phone rings, who's calling? Let me see if I want to take that call or not. No, for a young man, he gets a call, oh, it's the prettiest girl in the school. He's going to hop right on that phone, answer that call. For a young woman, if she's getting a call from the most masculine, athletic young man in the school, when the phone rings, she sees that, or she's going to take that call. And there might be people that they don't want to answer. You don't want to answer the call from as well. I mean, that happens to me all the time. I get sales calls from an organization called U.S. Pharmacy. They must have found out I'm old as dirt, and they think I have to take a lot of drugs. And they're trying to always sell me drugs. And I've come to recognize by using my caller ID when I get a call from them. And I don't want to take that call, you know. And so they've gone to a system where they rotate the number, the incoming number. But if I don't recognize that number any other number, I don't take the call. So that's kind of the options that we have. Caller ID allows you to evaluate who the caller is, decide whether or not you have a positive or negative response to that caller. Only one quick look at the ID and you have a response. So caller ID has revolutionized telephone communication. And when you get a spiritual call, you also can immediately understand someone is ringing your phone, and you can check your screen and evaluate the call. You have options. You have options when you get the call. You open it up, you look at it, and you see who it is. Spiritually speaking, you recognize from just the spiritual insight that you have who it is that's communicating with you. If it's God that's communicating with you, you have three options, don't you? We all have three options every time we get a telephone call. Can, first of all, push that button, answer that call, and start to communicate right away. That's one option. Second option is you can forever reject this caller. That's the way I am with U.S. Pharmacy. I'm just trying to forever reject this caller. But he's taken to calling me over and over with other ways. But you know what the most common response is? Later, dude. Later, dude. Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. God is calling me, and what do I think that God wants? Well, I know it's a really good thing, but why don't I just put it off for a while? I can enjoy the things of the world first, and then later on, whenever I get around to it, then I will respond to the call. I'll just save the number here in my cell phone, and later on, when I get around to it, I'll call back to God. Luke chapter 14. We were already in Luke 14, weren't we, earlier? Luke 14. No, of Deuteronomy 14. Luke 14, verse 16, going down through verse 21. A certain man made a great supper, and he invited a lot of people to come. He invited many. So, all of our young people, I've already showed you that the Bible says that if you have one converted parent, you have been invited. You have been called. He bade many. And sent his servant at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are ready. They all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, well, I just bought this piece of ground, and I have to go take care of it and see it. Later, dude, later. Maybe I can come later. Just let me be excused for now. Another one said, well, he had another excuse. He had his own reasons why. I bought 5 yoke of oxen. I go to prove them, maybe some other time. None of them are saying, no, I don't really want to come. It's just that there's other things that have higher priority than answering this call right now. Another said, I married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. All of these were good, valid things to be doing, weren't they? But where's the priority? Where's the priority? So that servant came and showed his lord these things. Then the master of the house became angry, said to his servant, go out into the streets and lanes of the city and bring in hither the poor, the maimed, the halt, and the blind. I'm going to get back in touch with God later. And many people do get back in touch with God later. Many people hear the call, know the call, and we don't necessarily expect the call is going to be answered right away. But there is a time period that sooner or later, God is going to find a replacement if he doesn't have people now. God is patient, but he has positions to fill in his kingdom. That's what the Feast of Tabernacles is all about. It's all about the people that God is going to call and use to serve in his kingdom. And people are being called now so that they can serve in the kingdom. And if they can't come to the realization that they need to do that now, ultimately, those people are replaced. God is patient, but he has positions that he needs to fill in his kingdom. Now, I would say this as well. The fact that we all are called, it's not the end of what we need to do, is it? God calls us, but that's only the beginning. That's only the beginning. I thought of an Irish folk song in this regard. It's a long way to Tipperary, you know. You get called, but before you really accomplish and reach the case of being chosen and then being faithful, the calling is just the start. We got the cell phone rings. You answer it. There's a lot to be done after that. That's only where we begin. So we have to follow through on that thing in order to accomplish what God wants us to accomplish and needs us to accomplish so that we can be a servant in his kingdom, bringing all of mankind into the knowledge of his truth. There comes a time when it's too late. The position has been filled. God has many names and numbers in his list of contacts. Young people, and I mean all of you young people, your name is one of them. And you've advanced from the position of being called to the position of being chosen. Being a king in the kingdom is a matter of getting from being called to the point of getting chosen. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 14. Very short, very, very concise, few words of scripture. Matthew 22, verse 14. Many are called, but few are chosen. That makes us all think, doesn't it? Makes us all think, doesn't it? Lots and lots of people are called, but of those people that are called, only a small number are chosen. It's as if Christ standing on the shores or standing in the boat in Matthew chapter 13 with all of the people on the shore, thousands of people on the shore, speaks to a few. Many of them came to hear what he had to say, but they weren't chosen to understand the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. Many are called, but few are chosen. The Bible means what it says and says what it means. Wherefore, 2 Peter 1 and verse 10, wherefore, the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you will never fail. Answer the call immediately. Take the first option. The ball is in your court.